Thank you very much. Great to be with everyone to join together this important discussion. I want to also just give a very special thank you to Mr. Steinman and Kesser Torah for the partnership, Rabbi Chayton for arranging this all, and giving me the opportunity to share with you some ideas and some parenting strategies. Tonight's focus is about girls, and the topic was called Raising From Teenagers Girls, as Rabbi Chayton mentioned before. Therefore, it's got a specific focus, of course, around inspiration of Torah observance, inspiration in Yiddishkeit, and so on and so forth. The truth is that upon reflection, a lot of the principles I'm going to go through today, the general principles are the same for both boys and girls, even though, as Rachel mentioned, they're very different. The differences lie mostly in the specific areas, which we're going to try to get through some of them, and we're going to try and focus on some of them. But for those who were here last time and are here tonight as well, so it's a little bit of revision, and that's okay, especially when it comes to parenting. Always good to go over the topics again. Always good to get together as a strategy. First strategy of parenting is actually to get together and to discuss and strengthen each other. Parenting is something which God gave us as a gift. Hashem gave it to us. It's our zuchus, it's our merit. It's our achrayus, it's our responsibility. It's something that we committed to when we have children, of course. And although it can be difficult, but we have to believe, and I want to say this from the outset because it's so important, especially nowadays, to understand this and acknowledge this, that we have to firmly believe that although it might be difficult at times, and at times it might seem like it's hard and it's challenging and we might fail, but Hashem gives us the nesinas koyach, He gives us the strength, He gives us the tools. Yes, we will make mistakes sometimes, but we have to keep trying and keep at it. Parenting is not an easy thing, especially teenagers and especially nowadays. But we get together, we strengthen each other, and just the getting together itself. I always found throughout my parenting, and I'm still in the middle of parenting, Baruch Hashem, but I've always found that when we go together and we hear a parenting course or a parenting lecture, even if we don't hear new things, but just the very fact that we gave it time and we gave it focus already empowers us, already strengthens us, and it's such an important thing. Okay. I want to give just three very, very short introductions. First of all, the focus of tonight is on the home. The home, I believe, is the most important force in a child's life. The home is the anchor. The home is where a child ultimately is connected to. And both home and school are a critical partnership, and they each have their critical role. But the most important thing is that neither of them, not school or parents, should be delegating or blaming each other. In other words, each needs to do their role and their role seriously and create that partnership, which we are doing tonight as well. Second of all, because we only have an hour, of course, we're going to cover some basic principles, but it's very self-understood. Not everything we say tonight is relevant to everyone and to every teenager and to every situation. It's just general rules, and of course, in specifics, one has to reflect, one has to think, one has to discuss with others, and take just these rules, these concepts, as more of a foundational process. Thirdly, I want to just mention that there are some general parenting principles that start from when a child is born. We're not really going to go through today in such detail. I did a couple of months ago give a two-part series called Torah Parenting, which was focused on educating or parenting small children. We have the link. I recommend people listen to it because some of those principles are relevant when children become teenagers as well. But at the same time, it's important to understand that even if we miss those principles when children were very young, it's never too late. We can always apply these ideas. We can always work towards better parenting. We can always improve. And when we try and put in the effort, Hashem hopefully will always give us success. So let's jump in. We're going to move quickly because we've got a lot to cover. Can I suggest if anyone has any questions, please feel free to put it on the chat. We'll try and cover them as much as we can. And I'm very happy if people want to email me or contact me to discuss these issues further, by all means. I want to just begin, and I think it's important that, you know, we have this principle we always say, Yedia samako chatzi refua. Sometimes diagnosis of the problem is half the cure. And sometimes it's important to understand the challenge, not to dwell on it, but to understand the challenge as we go along. So let's just let's just discuss for a moment some of the challenges that we have today. First of all, teenagers, a teenage child stage is a difficult time for the teenagers. Now, it's a difficult time for the children. It's important as parents that we have some understanding in that. Because despite the brave and sometimes sort of chutzpahic or obnoxious front that they sometimes put on, it's actually very complex, it's very challenging for them. You have to understand that the teenage period is a transition from the innocence of childhood to adulthood. Even in Torah, we have the concept that although bar and bas mitzvah is when children become responsible, but they don't become fully responsible until they're 20, and of course that's another discussion altogether, but it's a really transitional period where they transition from that childhood period to an adult. It's a period where hormonally they're all over the place, physically they're all over the place, they're fighting for the independence, they're fighting for the independence, but at the same time, they're still craving, even if they don't always admit it or show it, they're craving our love, our approval, dependence, and so on and so forth. It's a time of when self-image, confidence, social practices, self-esteem, all these areas are very challenging in the teenage years. Now, when I start to also understand, there's not only, of course, a difficult time for the children, but of course, a difficult time for parents. And very briefly, suddenly, parents are sort of thrown off, especially when it's their first teenager, when they had this little cute, little sweet, innocent child, and suddenly it's almost like the child disappeared and an alien took over. So that's a hard thing. Secondly, we need to understand that when children become teenagers, we very often, as parents, start to personalize things. You see, it's one thing when a five-year-old is a little bit rude to you or contradicts you or screams at you. You understand it's a little child, but when it's a semi-adult, when someone's already older, you start to expect more from them. You start to expect more maturity, more respect. And often when teenagers challenge us, we start to personalize it. It's a real skill, and it's a critical part of parenting teenagers to learn not to do that. And the other thing with teenagers is, as we all know, and those of us who have teenagers will know, that teenagers generally are extremely unpredictable. They can be a darling one day, completely different the next day. It's a very, very challenging time for parents because teenagers can be extremely, extremely unpredictable. Now, that's in general terms, and it always was like this. However, today in our modern times, we have some specific challenges, and I think they're very important to talk about. We'll talk about them very briefly now and then come back to them a little bit later. Probably on top of the list, by the way, these challenges are specifically with emphasis when it comes to what we call Torah parenting. We're trying to imbue Yirat Shamayim, we're trying to imbue frum values and Torah values in children. These challenges become even more challenging. High up on the list, or perhaps on top of the list, is technology. And this is true with boys and for girls, that unlimited and unfettered access that children have to technology and sometimes very dangerous material, and they have access to it in a way where they know more about it, more how it works, more what the information there that's accessible, they know a lot more than we do, which is a very, very challenging thing. Now, I want to just emphasize that this is not a potential problem. This is a real problem. It's a problem that is hitting all of us. And it's a problem which is challenging each and every one of our teenagers, maybe everyone a different way, but it's a real issue. Right? We understand that today kids are exposed to very inappropriate stuff, sometimes outright pornography or content with sexual content, all that kind of stuff. It's very, very inappropriate. It's develops a real dependence often, and sometimes even when the material is not so inappropriate, there's a dependence or perhaps even an addiction, sometimes a clinical addiction that is developed through that overexposure to the screen, that overexposure to the computer. Now, these things, it could be games, it could be videos, it could be, as I say, inappropriate material and so on and so forth. There's a lot of studies I'm going to put up in the chat later if I remember towards the end, a very, very important article, which I'm going to base some ideas tonight on, by Dr. Pelkovitz about dealing with technology and children. And they cite many studies about, and other studies as well, about the far-reaching effects that this has in boys in one way, girls in a different way, but it has very damaging effects on teenagers specifically. Things like social isolation, impaired physical self-image, distorted expectations, misunderstanding of how relationships work, which these things can have long-term effects. I'm not trying to create a gloomy picture. I'm not trying to sort of be depressive about this, but it is very real, and it is something that we really have to highlight. And we're going to come back to this. Linked to this, and just general, the avir, as we say, the culture in the world today is one that there's a general decline in yiras shamayim, in fear of heaven, in commitment to frumkeit and mitzvahs, a general decline in being excited about Torah learning and mitzvahs in general, being excited about spirituality, and it comes together with a very, very big decline in our generation of what we call Kabbalah's oil, which is self-control, compliance, listening, respect for authority. We live in a very me world. We live in a very self-centered world. We live in a world where people are being taught, children are being taught, explicitly or by implication, that you need to do what's good for you, you need to do what feels good for you, you need to do what feels right for you, and so on and so forth. These things are very, very much banded around and very much taught and very much absorbed, and it's having a tremendous effect spiritually, both in our commitment between us and Hashem. But I need to tell you that there are unbelievable studies out there, which just recently I was reading about the effect that technology, for all sorts of reasons, has had in a decline on the way we relate to other people, particularly in the area of empathy, which has all kinds of ramifications in terms of bullying and kindness and healthy relationships and so on and so forth. So these are some of the challenges that are specific to our generation, which are standing in the way often, even when we have very good educators and very good parents and very exciting messages in terms of our commitment to Torah and mitzvahs, but sometimes they get harmed, they get blocked, they get disturbed and distracted by some of the real challenges in terms of the culture of the world, in terms of technology and overexposure to technology, and so on and so forth. But it's not all bad. Because one thing you also have to bear in mind, that I'm not just saying this to create balance, I'm saying something that I've observed and something that is very, very real. It is not all bad, because at the same time, I think it's very true and very real that our teenagers are looking for meaning. Our teenagers, actually, really, their heart is in the right place. If you get them excited, they're amazing today, sometimes better than we were as kids. They're amazing in terms of their excitement to learn, their excitement to daven, their excitement to be involved in Yiddishkeit, their excitement to do good, to do chesed. They have what it takes. There's some really very, very promising signs. The raw material is fantastic. The externalities, the external threats are very real. But the intrinsic values, the intrinsic desire to do the right thing is very, very real. Our kids are not bad in any sense of the word. On the contrary, they're amazing children. What they do need is, they just need us to keep them on the right path. They need us to be involved. They need our involvement as parents. They need our guidance. They need our inspiration to make sure that what they have is channeled and kept in the right direction. Okay. So, what I want to do, and I said, like I said, I'm moving quickly. What I want to do is, I want to first start by sharing some general principles about parenting teenaging, which I think are really important. And then I'm going to branch off, while I'm doing this, in some specifics, and also towards the end, deal with some very specific areas. To make it easier, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to base it on a formula, just that'll be very easy for you to remember, which was inspired by a book written by Rabbi Daniel Schonbuch. The book is called At Risk, Never Beyond Reach. This is what the book looks like. I think it's available. And it's a great title, because it means even when you identify a difficult teenager, one that you think is at risk on any level, but it's never beyond reach and one can always reach them. And this formula, which is based on his writings, talks about the three C's. Okay. And these are the three C's, which I'm going to ask you to just remember, and it's something you can spend a few minutes every single day just to think about, how am I doing in the area of these three C's. The three C's are connection, control, and communication. Let's go through each one. But before we do, I want to just make a very, very important point. These three C's obviously are very easy to talk about. However, you need to understand that the combination of all these three together are a little bit opposite, and therefore they can be difficult, they can be tricky, but yet critical. And what I'll ask you to remember is this, and I've always thought about this, that parenting is not just something we do with children. Parenting is a process and a journey of self-growth for ourselves. To become a parent, to be an effective parent, we need to work on ourselves. And work on ourselves means that we need to work on ourselves in a way where we're able to carry opposites at the same time, because we'll see what this formula entails, is what we call in using the terminology of Kabbalah or Hasidus, is the combination of both Chesed and Gvura, the right hand, the left hand, sometimes being loving, sometimes being more firm, and so on and so forth. But also it's self-growth and understanding that parenting is doing what's right for the child. Rabbi Twersky talks about this. He says that parenting is not to make kids into a naches machine. Right? We as parents are the ones that establish the values that we want to transmit to our children, but we also have to understand that the absorption of those values, the application of those values, differs from child to child. It's not a one mold thing, and it's not necessarily the mold that we feel comfortable with. And we have to understand that the parenting is not about us. It's not about the way we think it needs to be done. It's what is doing what is correct for this child in terms of instilling those values. Very, very important. So with that introduction, so remember, the three C's are the key formula, but at the same time, we need to understand that each and every day we need to look at ourselves, not just our children. Often parents just look at their children and see parenting as a thing we need to do with children. Parenting is a thing we need to do with ourselves in terms of reflecting on our own growth, on our own avoida, and our own working on ourselves, and so on and so forth. So let's unpack the three C's. So the first one is connection. Maybe this is the most important one even. So what we need to understand in terms of connection is this, that in the critical stage of adolescence, having a relationship with your child is critical. Now, let me just clarify that. When I say having a relationship with your child, I do not mean to become your child's best friend. That is the opposite and the antithesis of Torah values. In Torah, there are different types of relationships. Some of them are what I call hierarchical relationships, where there's authority, where there's people on top, and they need to tell, it's a hierarchical thing. We're not equals, we're not buddies, we're not friends, we're not mates. However, what it does mean is, in the context of parenting, it means having an extremely strong connection with your child. Extremely important. It's important because it is only in the context of a relationship, it is only in context of a strong relationship that we have with our children that they are able to be mekablim, they're able to receive from us, they're able to listen from us, they're able to absorb the values you want to teach them. If we don't have a relationship with our teenagers, they shut us out. They create a blockage. We can scream, we can kick and scream as much as we want. It won't help. We need, the only pathway to a child, and particularly a teenager, is to have a strong relationship. Now, by the way, that relationship cannot be delegated to one parent. I mean, it's always better to have a relationship even if it's only one parent, but it needs to be really both parents, right? This is both with boys and with girls. So let's unpack what that relationship means. What does that mean to have a relationship with that child? First thing it means is to love a child, and I know it might sound a bit cliche, but it's so important. To love a child unconditionally and to express that love. Now, let me just stop there. We're talking about teenagers, teenage girls. We're talking about teenagers where it can be a little bit difficult to express that love because they're unpredictable and it needs to be when they want, it needs to be where they want, and it needs to be how they want. So we need to be clever. We need to have the right antennas. We need to pick up on what it is that the children actually want. So it needs a lot of skill sometimes, right? It also, to love a child unconditionally and to show that love also requires a very important skill, particularly when it comes to teenaging, and let me explain what it is. I call it the skill of bouncing back. See, teenagers forget sometimes quicker than we do. So you have a scenario, for example, where you can have a family get together and everything is going fine and the little children are doing great and the mood in the house is fantastic, and your teenager, your 15-year-old, your 16-year-old, your 14-year-old makes a grand entrance. Teenagers, when they come into a room, sometimes they're present and they upset the equilibrium. Sometimes they upset a child. They scream at the mother. They contradict. They're in a bad mood. They had a bad day and they wreak havoc. And they're obnoxious and they ruin this. I mean, not all teenagers like this, but sometimes this happens. And then they storm out with eating, without eating, and they go to their room. The next morning, they come into the kitchen. You haven't slept all night because you're just so upset. And the child comes in as if nothing happened. Hi, mom. What's happening? What's doing? And you like think to yourself, what kind of chutzpah is that? You're not going to apologize. You're not going to... You just like that. You ruined my night and now you just walk in. And the real skill as parents is Yes, later when there's a good moment, when everything's calmed down, you might want to take the teenager, you might want to take your daughter into a room and have a chat about last night's behavior. But when everyone's getting ready to go to school and things are tense in the house anyways, now's the time to smile, to say good morning, to give them the lunch, wish them a good day, tell them you love them, even though it's hard. That's what I mean by bouncing back. That's part of developing a relationship with your child, and it's a critical skill with teenaging because you can't always wait till everything's sorted out. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't mean you have to condone the behavior. You might need to have a conversation later. You don't condone bad behavior, and you certainly don't condone disrespect. But you still have to be able to not take it personally and to bounce back quickly and to continue being nice and continue being loving and continue being connected. Now, I want to just say something, and I'll say it slowly because this is really important. Remember this rule, if nothing else. The teenager that makes it the hardest for you to have a relationship with her is the one that craves that relationship the most. Let me say it a bit differently. The teenager that makes it really hard to love is the one that needs it the most. Okay? So often we will show our love, we will show our relationship, we'll show our connection to teenagers that are compliant, that give us nachas, so to speak. And the ones that are more challenging, we don't. Those are the ones that are crying out for it. They need it the most. Go out of your way to do it. Go out of your way to build that relationship. Go out of the way to love and to express that love. The next part of how a relationship works with teenagers is to spend time. To spend time with teenagers. Very, very important. Not always easy. Spend time. Spend time doesn't mean lecturing. Spend time doesn't mean helping them with their homework. Spending time doesn't mean doing critical things. It means just schmoozing. This is so important, a component that is so missing in lots of relationships today, but particularly with our children, particularly with teenagers. Just schmooze, find out, spend time with them. In Rabbi Schonbuch's book, he gives 73 examples of how you could do that. I'm just going to list a few. Things just like maybe work on a hobby together with them, cook together, cook a meal together if they're interested in it, go to a concert, go to the library, learn with them if they're interested, go to a museum, go with them to open a bank account if that's what they want. Work on a family tree, just different things, right? Get them to help you out with the latest app, with the latest technology stuff, because they know a lot more than you do about it. But just find ways, when they're ready, when they want, how they want, because it has to be something that they want and they cherish and they're in the mood of, to spend time. Spending time is a really important part of building a relationship with children. Third thing in the relationship, third component, I'm just going to mention a few things to do with relationships. The third idea of building a relationship with a teenager particularly is help them through failure without judgment. All right? That's a difficult thing. Children often fail. Teenagers often fail. They make mistakes. They like to put up a big front. They certainly don't like to be criticized. One of the things that teenagers specifically, human beings generally, but teenagers specifically cringe with is criticizing. You need to know how to criticize. Got to be criticizing with love. But you need to help them through with failure without judging them. Because they want to be helped. So when they make mistakes, help them through. Don't judge them. Help them through. Help them explain to them that failure is okay. It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to mess up. It's okay you're not defined by your failure. You're not defined by your mistakes. Help them through failure, but do without judgment. The fourth thing, and a really important thing, is because praise. Now, often when you hear parenting lectures about little children, we talk a lot about praise. Teenagers need praise too, but not the same way as small children. Teenagers need praise in an appropriate way. It has to be often, it has to be pointing out the good stuff, because often we point out the bad stuff, but it needs to be done appropriately. It doesn't have to be done in a very, very mushy way, like with little children, of course, not stars on charts or big rewards or public announcements. These are all things that teenagers cannot stand. But it can be just a very quick, respectful, quiet compliment. I noticed you washed up the dishes today. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I know you're revising for your test. That's really good. Thank you. Or, you know, thank you for helping with your sister today, or whatever the case is. Right? Just small but quick and oftenly noticed forms of praise is really, really important. So in summary, that's the first C. So the first C is connection, relationship with our children. And I'm highlighting it and I'm emphasizing it so much because often We get carried away in what we think is parenting. Parenting means instructing, lecturing, guiding, hopefully inspiring, and we just don't devote enough time to building that connection, build that relationship. And that relationship really is the foundation, because it's through that relationship that we can get everything else through, and that's why it's a foundational principle, and it's really the first step to the whole process and the journey of parenting teenagers. The second C is control. Now let's unpack this carefully. First of all, do not be scared to parent. We live in a time today that parents are becoming scared. Teenagers are big, teenagers know a lot, teenagers are very empowered today, and therefore we start to be frightened of saying no, we start to be frightened of creating boundaries, we be frightened to parent, essentially. Don't be scared to parent. You are in the driving seat, you are in charge. Use your voice of authority, not screaming, but voice of authority, very different, right? Assertiveness, when you need to, and create those boundaries, as Dr. Pilkovitz likes to say, that love without limits doesn't work. As critical as love is, love without limits doesn't work, because at the end of the day, all children, including teenagers, crave boundaries, crave structure, crave safety. Don't bow to social pressure. Don't bow to things like all my friends' parents let them, or everyone else is doing this. If it's really important for you that your teenager behave in a certain way, don't be scared to implement that. So that's what control means. However, first of all, even with all children, but with teenagers specifically, that control, in other words, that authority that we have as parents, needs to be assertive, but it needs to be in the context of the first C. It needs to be in context of the healthy, warm relationship that we have with our children. And it has to be done cleverly. Rabbi Schonberg talks about this, it's a great line, he talks about shifting from direct control to indirect control. Let me give you some examples of what that means. First of all, don't over-legislate. Right? In other words, don't be scared to parent, don't be scared to lay down boundaries, don't be scared if something is really important to insist. However, don't over-legislate. Don't make rules and many rules, particularly in things that are not that critical or that are not really relevant to their growth and their journey. Some of you heard from me last time, especially with girls. Some girls, their rooms are just like, I don't know, like mazes that you can hardly get through them. I had a teenage daughter who's now married with children. I won't tell you who it is. But her room was terrible, and today she's a tidy freak, right? As long as it's not unhygienic, forget about it. Close the door and just ignore it. Or like someone once told me, if you're really worried about your teenagers messing their room, tidy it up for them, take a picture, blow up the picture, put on the front of the door of their room, close the door, and every time you walk by the room, it'll be a tidy room, right? But don't think about the things that are important. Pick your rules. Pick your boundaries. Number one. Number two, don't micromanage. Right? So let's talk about a Torah concept, for example. You're having a meal, a Shabbos meal. You want your child to bench. That's something you want to insist on. It's a value. You eat, you have to bench. It's fine to very assertively and calmly, with love and respect, tell the kid, don't forget the bench. You see the child is moving away from the table. They forgot the bench. Take a bench and bench. The child's complying. The child gets up, takes a bench, or sits down and starts to bench. Then sometimes what parents do is they micromanage. You're not saying the words. What, you finished benching already? So fast? You couldn't have benched so quickly. I couldn't bench so quickly even if I tried. And I'd be reading for a lot longer than you, right? Big mistake. They went, they got the bencher, they're looking at the bencher, don't worry if their eyes are wandering, don't worry what they're saying, they're not saying, they listen to you, they're involved in the process of benching. This is true with davening, right? Your kid gets up in the school holidays, you say brachas, take a siddur, daven, fine, they take a siddur, don't look over their shoulder, don't micromanage them, it doesn't work. It's not, a teenager is definitely not going to work. You've made your point is davening is important, they've complied in their way, they've taken the siddur. It's okay. Leave it. Move on. Right? Now, thirdly, and this is really important, I'm going to pause here a little bit and go slowly. generally, with teenagers specifically, rather than pronouncing rules, and then when they don't work, you get your sense of failure and you kind of hide as a parent. Rather than doing that, give voice to values. In other words, I think with teenagers generally, we need to shift from rules, not that rules have to be non-existent, they are sometimes. We have to shift from rules to values. Now, many things we want teenagers to do, particularly in a Torah context, are things that are based on the values which we hold dear. And a few years ago, I think I heard it from Dr. Pelkowitz actually, and he talked about recent research about how to teach values. Teaching values is not an easy thing to do because values aren't subjects, right? But often what we do as parents is we become very insistent that kids adhere or subscribe to certain values, but we don't teach those values. We don't give voice to those values. And giving voice to values requires three things. Okay, I'm going to give a couple of examples and a couple of important examples. The first thing is it requires discussion. See, for example, let's go back to the benching rule or davening rule or sitting at a Shabbos table rule or whatever the case is. Right? It's not enough just to say the rule when it's important and assume that everyone knows it's important. I mean, who doesn't know that benching is important? Who doesn't know that sitting at a Shabbos table is important? But it's a value to sit at a Shabbos table because Shabbos is a value. It's an important thing. Benching is a value. It's davening. You need to give voice to that value. You need to talk about it. If you think your children have a problem davening properly or benching properly, you really need to talk about benching. You need to find opportunities to give dvar Torah, to show how important it is benching. Explain its value. Explain its importance. Explain its place within our lives and so on and so forth. So that's really, really, really important. The second thing is, so you need to find opportunities, not just to bark instructions, bench, take the bencher, say a bracha, daven, and so on and so forth. It needs to be, we need to find times to talk about those values. The second thing is we need to have passion. Kids need to see that we are passionate about values. If you wanted to be passionate about something, you have to be passionate about it. That's the best example. Passion, for example, get excited about it. If you want children to really learn well in school, you want them to come back and you ask them on Friday night, what did they learn in the parsha? You know what? It's not that important what they learned in the parsha. I'll tell you what's more important. That is important, and it's nice to hear what kids have learned in school. And if they do well, then you know, tell them that they did really, really well. And when you see the teacher, give them a compliment. But what's even more important is for you to sit down at a Shabbos table and announce whether the child is completely focusing or not. Doesn't matter. But announce, you know, this week I was listening to a podcast and I heard such an amazing gematria or an amazing dvar Torah, and share it with the table, right? In other words, let them see that you're so passionate about it, you're involved in it. When you bench, bench with feeling. Or talk about benching in a really unbelievable way. Say you heard such an unbelievable vart about benching and so on and so forth, right? You know, they tell a story about the Chafetz Chaim, about a child who was kicked out of yeshiva. Or they wanted to kick him out of yeshiva because he broke Shabbos. And the Chafetz Chaim heard about it and he asked to see the Bacher. A famous story, I'm not going to go into great detail now because we're running out of time. But the Chafetz Chaim sat down and was later revealed that the person remained frum afterwards. And the reason he remained frum was because the Chafetz Chaim just took his hand and a tear came down the Chafetz Chaim's eyes and he said, Shabbos, Shabbos. And that was it. That was enough. Which goes into the third thing, of course, which is a cliche, but so critically important. If you want to teach a value, you have to model that value. You have to model that value. If you want to teach a child, we'll get to it later, about you shouldn't be so much on the screen. You need to reflect, how much are you on the screen? How much are we on the screen? How much are we adhering? If you want to instill a child the value of keeping Shabbos with all the halachas and the Yiras Shamayim, how strict are we on Shabbos? How often do we ask Shilas? Right? Part of the passion, by the way, is when you can, not always appropriate, to share with your family that, you know, just a few days ago, a father called me up with a Shilas that I knew he knew the answer to. But he called me because he wanted to call me in front of his children. He wanted to call me with a Shilas. He says he wants to call the Rav. He told his children, I'm going to call the Rav for the Shilas. Maybe we can do this, maybe we can't do. So the child saw how this works, right? Now, I want to go to something which I know is in everyone's mind, and I'm going to stop here and talk about it. It's a specific area. And it's a very, very challenging area. The topic of tzniut, the topic of modesty, particularly with girls. Now, I know this is a very complex topic, and I'm not qualified, nor is it appropriate for me to go into it in detail, right? But because it's such a critical thing, and I think we're talking about it, we need to be tachlistic, I'm going to talk about it a little bit, because I want to talk about it in the context of tzniut in values. First of all, I think it's really, really important that because it's a value, and this is with no judgment whatsoever, but every parent, if they have expectations of how their child should behave or dress or whatever the case is, children, parents need to first work out very with great clarity what their value, what their standard is. That's really important to be consistent with it, right? Then the way to do it with teenagers specifically, starting from very young, but specifically teenagers. And let me give this example, because this is a topic on teenage girls. Is three things, voice to values. And let's go through this a little bit. First of all, you need to have discussions about it, not instructions. Instructions don't normally go very well, especially in this area. What works much better is when appropriate and when you think the child is ready to listen, whether you're taking a walk with them or whether you're having a discussion with them, whether you're engaging in a discussion, have a discussion. But when you have a discussion in the area of tznius, let me ask you and beg you to do three things. Okay, don't only make it about clothing, because it's not about clothing. It's about a way of life. Secondly, don't make it a technicality which becomes a religious warfare, right? In some houses, it's like a swear word. As soon as kids hear the word, they turn off completely, right? Both from teachers or from parents, because it's become like a tension, it's become like a war. Make it about a discussion of a way of life that is just a way of life. It's not a technical thing. And also, don't make it only about girls, because it's not. It's a way of life which is about everyone. What do I mean? Let me just specify a little bit, right? When I talk about having a discussion, I mean have a discussion about Edelkeit, as we say in Yiddish, about a refined lifestyle. That's what tznius really is. It's about a refined lifestyle. Yes, of course it has halachas. Halachas that are specific to boys, halachas that are specific to girls, particularly girls in clothing and so on and so forth. But it's not about that. The discussion should be surrounding, and it needs to go around the kedusha, the sanctity of it, the validating the hardship of it, but yet the protection that comes with it, the royalty, the majesty that comes with protecting the beauty and the image of a Jewish girl and so on and so forth. We need to talk about what it means to be modest in all areas, how we talk to others, how we act, how we scream, how we don't scream, how we talk to other people, how it's a way of life, and then the clothing just comes just as part of that whole thing. It needs to be a lifestyle which is about the whole family. It needs to be something that we talk about this and talk about it a lot. Giving examples, stories of tzaddikim, stories, whatever the case is, there's a lot available around that, but it can't only be about specific rules, about specific ways of dress. It's got to be about a general lifestyle. Very important also when you talk about it is to give validation, to validate and acknowledge that it's difficult. Kids are growing up today in a world which is crazy. And therefore, it's hard for children. It's so hard. I'll tell you a little story, and I said this last time. I tell stories, but I only tell stories that work. I made plenty of mistakes in my life as a parent, but I won't tell you those stories. I'll just tell you the stories that work, right? But I can tell you once something I did. I'll just give you an example, something you can do. I once took a walk with one of my daughters, who everyone along the stage, have difficulty. There's a challenging area. And we walked to, a walk to Bondi Junction. It was a hot summer's day and just whatever. I mean, the street is just crazy, right? And I came back and I decided I'm going to write her a letter, leave it on her pillow. And I wrote her a letter about how proud I was that she was able to go against the current of the whole world and acknowledging what kind of crazy, pressurizing world it is to live in the modern times and how difficult it must be. And I'm so proud of her and it's so amazing and so beautiful. And she was just like, wow. Little things. You can do things like that, but you need to validate it. It needs to become part of the discussion. The passion part of it. We said the second part, discussion, not just discussion, but passion. Kids need to see us getting excited about people who are understated, people who are idle. They need to see on us, on both parents, fathers and mothers, they need to see a little bit of a disdain for showiness, for the pursuit today of fame and publicity, which is all the antithesis of what the essence of what tznius is all about. They need to see us treat people who don't pursue showiness and externalities and superficiality, recognizing them and treating them with respect and glorifying them and so on and so forth. They need to see us talking about people who are the role models of the world, who we pick as our heroes, who we pick as our celebrities, who we pick as people we really respect. that they need to see our passion, not lecturing to them, that they just need to see and notice how our discussion goes about who we think is important, who we think are role models, who we think are successful people. Do we associate success with showiness and superficiality, or do we associate success with refinement, edelkeit, getting things done in a quiet and assuming way, and so on and so forth? These are all foundational things, which then things like dress and talk and all that flows on. Of course we have to communicate halachas. Of course we have to set standards. That's true, but it's got to be in the context of this discussion. And of course, modeling. Modeling is so important, what I mean, obviously. And if we struggle as parents, we need to share that. But yes, share the desire to overcome the struggle. Not to display resentment, but to share this, but to share that we're able to go through that struggle. So I wanted to highlight that because it's a really, really important thing. And one final point in this area is that if it becomes a problem, particularly with teenagers, you've got to choose your battles very, very carefully. Because this is an area where rebelliousness can kick in very, very quickly. And if you're not sure what to do, I would speak about it with other people because and get a mentor, a mashpia, a guide, and take guidance. Because if you choose your battles wrong and you don't do it carefully and you don't pick the right things, you can really lose this battle very, very, very quickly. A war is not going to work. This is one area war will not work, definitely will not work. Yes, you can stand your ground and you can say certain things, I'm not buying for you, I am buying for you, etc., etc. But the younger they are, you mustn't be scared to parent, as I said before, but still, you need to do it in the context of values. So I think it needs to shift from an instruction to a value, and it's much, much more important. That's all part of the second C, control. I want to just run through a few more things with the second C. Instructions sometimes need to be done offline. You know, very often as parents, sometimes we get into a bit of a tension. It's called the dance of anger. Sometimes just don't react when people do something wrong. If a child storms off the Shabbos table or didn't daven that day or didn't bench or whatever the case, or didn't do the right thing, don't make a scene. Find the quiet moment when things are calm and talk about it then. Also, stay focused and diffuse tension. Diffuse, stand your ground, be assertive, but don't get into the conflict zone. There's lots to talk about this, but I don't want to get too much bogged down in the detail. Now, all of this, by the way, comes along with the third, can only be happened with the third C. And the third C is communication. So we have connection, control, and communication. Communication is so important. Communication involves talking and listening. We need to talk a lot to our children, as we said before. But we also need to get to know our child. Teenagers are sometimes very hard to get to know. They're a little bit sneaky. They sometimes create their own world. They put a blockage over themselves. Very hard. You need to look for clues. You need to ask questions, open-ended questions. You need to engage in discussion. You need to always have on your mind to listen and to get to know your child, because you might know things and pick up on cues that you need to explore further. Keep talking, keep listening. Don't push, don't extract, don't nudge. Praise when you can, as we said before, but communicate. Communication is so critical. So in the time we have left, I want to cover a few different areas. I want to go back to technology because I think it's a really important thing. And I want to just share with you that I think in our generation, as we know, I believe this is probably the single or perhaps the most greatest threat to your child's general development, to your child's ruchnis, to spirituality, to your child's frumkeit, to their future relationships, to everything, to the academic process. The research is clear today that even if you're watching very appropriate stuff, overexposure to screen time is bad for your brain. Fries your brain. Simple. Now, having said that, please do not go home tonight and ban technology, because it won't work. First of all, it's ineffective. Second of all, technology is a part of life. So I'm going to share with you soon a very, very important article, and I urge you to read it carefully, and some of what I'm going to say is based on that. Because Dr. Pelkowitz talks about, and this is so relevant to particularly cultures and communities that we live in, he talks about the isolation versus inoculation. You cannot isolate children from technology. Internet is part of our lives. Everything is bought online today. Everything is ordered online. Homework is online. God forbid, school shouldn't be online. Mirtz Hashem, but it is now in Melbourne. But right, so everything's online, right? So we cannot do that. We cannot ban technology from our children. We can push it off a little bit. We can hold off getting them a phone. Also, if you ban technology from children, if you don't give them phones, ultimately, and some level or not, they're going to be excluded. They won't be on the WhatsApp class WhatsApp. They won't know what's happening, and it could lead to a lot of exclusion and isolation. On the other hand, you cannot, cannot let your child go to bed at night with a device and with unlimited internet access, and you have no idea what they're doing that night. You have no idea what they're watching, you don't know what they're on, they know who they're talking to. It's just, you cannot do that, right? And please don't think to yourself, it can never happen to my teenager, because that is not true. It can happen to the best teenagers. It is very real. I cannot say it sharp enough, because we as parents, all of us, need to wake up. It can happen to the, I know stories upon stories where this happened to the best families and the best teenagers. Right? So please don't think to yourself, my kid is not going to do that, because it's not true. Hopefully it's not true. Hopefully it is true, I mean. But it's not necessarily true. So here are some of the steps that I think you need to do, and I'm just going to share with you some ideas. Again, it's all got to be done in the context of the three C's. It's got to have a foundation of a good relationship. You've got to have an open relationship with your child. You've got to be able to talk to them. You've got to be able to be soft with them, respectful, loving, but assertive and authoritative. I would start a conversation. Right? If you haven't done anything about this to date, here's some of the steps. Number one, start a conversation with your child that goes something like this. I would say to your child, look, we need to talk because, you know, I'm responsible for your well-being. Right? Now, I know you don't always like it, but you should know that I always mean your good. You need to explain to your child that temptation is normal, but it takes time and it's worth, you'll thank me. You know, in future times, you'll thank me for working on it. Tell them, I want you to be part of the discussion, but I do need to protect you. So therefore, you need to sit down with your children if they're overexposed to technology and say to them, look, we actually need to make changes. I hope I'm coming across strong enough, because this really needs to happen. We are living, it's crazy what's going on. Both the boys and girls, it's nuts. It is absolutely crazy. And I know this from, it's a reality. How much children are exposed to unprotected technology today. So we need to say to our children in this context, this discussion, look, we need to make some changes. So from now on, what we're going to do is, and ask them what they think. They might suggest unbelievable changes. They might suggest filters. They might suggest restrictions. You'll be astounded sometimes what they come up with themselves. Make them part of the conversation. But saying, listen, I don't want to nudge you and I don't want to breathe down your neck and I don't want to overlook every detail. But we are going to have to make some restrictions. For example, we're going to have to put some filters on. And there's some very good stuff out there, by the way. One I'm using at the moment, by the way, is called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Qustodio or something. Qustodio. It's a very good program where you get reports all the time what's happening and you can restrict things and so on and so forth, right? Say, look, I'm not gonna check up on you, but you should know that I am from now on gonna know what you're going on. I am gonna get a report. See, things like that. We're gonna work on appropriate filters. I don't want to make your life a misery, but you do need to be protected. Not because you're a bad child, because I need to protect you because temptation is big. We need to understand things like laptops in houses need to be done in public. Children should not have laptops in their bedrooms. It needs to be in public places that people could see, people could walk by. And you say to your child, I do not intend to look every time when you're on the laptop what you're doing, but I do need you when I walk by that you don't cover the page, you don't suddenly change the program. I need to have that trust with you that I can look at what you're doing. Right? If you make a mistake, that's fine. We'll work it through, but you need to be able to do that. Right? Having a phone is a privilege. If you break the rules, then maybe I need to take away from a short time, but don't ground them or ban them for 6 months. Don't create a war. Just be firm. I need to take it away for a couple of days, and maybe we'll start again or work it again and so on and so forth. Right. The second thing I would suggest to you is you need to start a coalition of parents. Often the problem with technology is that every child claims that they're the only one that's being pressured. Parents need to get a couple of parents with them in the class, start a coalition, decide together what you're going to do. The force of a collective parental force is very, very, very powerful. The third thing, what should I say, the third thing is really, really important, is reflect on your own usage. Do you spend meal times with your children without a phone? Right? The research is clear, by the way, that at-risk children often were lacking in family meal times. This is clear modern-day research. Right? Meal times are really important. Not always it's possible because, you know, but it's really, really important. There has to be times where children can talk to you and they don't see you checking your WhatsApps at the same time. We need to have times where we don't overexpose ourselves. They need to see us working on it. We need to make changes in ourselves. Maybe share that with your children. You know, I've been thinking about it. I'm actually going to make changes myself. It's not easy for me either. You know, when you come home from school, I'm going to have an hour. I don't look at my phone. I don't want you to look at your phone either or go to the computer. But right, have times, make up times that you could be on the computer, and so on and so forth. Depending on the child, there might be different rules and different regulations, but make them part of the discussion. Make sure they understand that you're in charge at the end of the day. but make them part, do it in a nice way, but in an assertive way. But we have to wake up. This is a problem, by the way, in all schools, in all communities. It's becoming a real problem, and we don't even know yet the far-reaching consequences. So this is something that needs to be attended to very, very urgently. I want to just talk about another area which is a little bit, I think, becoming more of a problem in different communities. And it's not only with boys, but it's with girls as well. And that's the problem of alcohol. And I want to link it to a very, very important parental concept, which I want to highlight, because this is with time becoming more and more of a serious problem. So let me just give you both sides of the story here. First of all, you cannot ban alcohol from society. First of all, you cannot ban it from Yiddishkeit. I mean, we make kiddush on wine. Oh, you could say you can make it on grape juice, but that's not true, because I mean, some people daf can make on wine. People do say l'chaim. There are kiddushim in shul. These things happen. So the same thing like internet, you have to inoculate. You cannot isolate, right? However, it needs lots of conversations, and similar to there are essentially three things that need to happen when it comes to alcohol. And I know maybe this is not relevant to everyone, or we think it's not relevant to anyone, but it is becoming a bit of a problem. Number one, as a community, we need to make sure, and I think parents need to stand up and talk to other parents. In all shuls, in all communities, we cannot ban l'chaim, but we could work towards creating that there should never be a culture of alcohol. In other words, kiddush clubs, ben hashmoshes, all these evil things need to go. And I think people need to speak up. And children should not walk into shul where they see a kiddush where the whole focus is the alcohol, or they see a party of alcohol. Second thing needs to happen, you need to have conversations with children. They need to understand, number one, the legalities. They need to understand that they cannot engage in this. But more importantly, they have to understand from a very young age the difference. The conversation has to go through the differences between making kiddush, saying a l'chaim sometimes when people come together and they fabrang a little bit, or they wish each other well or give a bracha, or drinking for pleasure and becoming empty and meaningless and purposelessness, right? Those conversations have to happen. Again, each of these points, we can take a long time to talk about them, but I'm just giving sort of the bullet points. The second thing is, and this is true with alcohol, and it's true with lots of things. Parents, part of control, part of the C, the second C, on the foundation of the first C is, parents need to know where your children are. Cannot send them out on a Motzei Shabbos and you don't know where they are, or you don't know what they're doing. Obviously, this is a tricky thing to navigate, because teenagers need independence, and that's fine. So you have to do it cleverly. But at the same time, with the conversation that comes before, parents need to know that we are parents, we care for them, and we are going to create those necessary boundaries. They need to tell you when they're going to be home, they need to tell you where they are, they need to tell you what you're doing, and they need to know that once in a while you could check up on them. I don't say check up on them every social, so that there needs to be a trust, and that if sometimes that trust is broken, if they went somewhere where they told you they're going one place and they went another place, it's time for a discussion and a serious discussion. But parents cannot hide. We cannot hide. We're living in too much of a dangerous world. It used to be that children were in good environments, so when they passed out of the doorway of the house, they could be going to another very healthy environment. Today we have to assume that they're going to an unhealthy environment. And therefore we need to be the anchor. We need to be, as parents, we need to be on top of things. I don't mean helicopter parenting, but I do mean to be aware. Parents need to know what their kids are doing. You need to know where your daughters are. You need to know who they're socializing with. Not always you can stop everything. Not always you can say no to everything. But you need to know what they're doing so you can have discussions, that you can put in a place reasonable boundaries. Each child is different and each situation is different. But I fear that what's happening is that it's becoming too much in the hard basket, and sort of parents are like hiding a little bit. And that's not a good thing. Parents really need to engage. You need to engage, even if it's difficult. Don't be afraid. Your children will thank you for it. You need to engage. You need to know where they are. You need to have lots of conversations, again, in the context of the three C's, because then it's effective and then it works. I want to just mention a couple of other things before we wrap up. Oh, I see there's a couple of... Okay, before we go on, I just want to say this talk is being recorded, by the way, and it will be on the Binah website. And contact me or contact Hesoterra, and they'll have access to it. So by all means, and definitely. But just want to make a couple of things. First of all of this, I don't want to only make parenting about what the kids need to stay away from. First of all, even when we talk about technology, there's a lot of good in technology, and we need to steer children into that. Of course, what we really want to do is, and we talked about this briefly, we want to inspire them for Ruchnis, we want to inspire them to keep Shabbos, we want to inspire them to keep Shabbos properly, we want to inspire them to daven properly, to learn properly, to dress properly, and so on and so forth. But the reason I place such emphasis on things like boundaries and alcohol and technology is because we can't get through unless these things are taken care of. If children are steeped in technology, in overexposure to screen time, to inappropriate material, to games, to whatever the case is, they become dull. Their senses are dull, and it's very hard for them to absorb the inspiration which you're trying so hard to give them. So once we sort of focus on these areas and we focus it with some sort of sense of urgency, then of course the most important part of parenting is not this. The most important part of parenting is creating inspiration, creating an amazing Shabbos table, creating opportunities for them to learn in an exciting and inspiring way, creating opportunities for them to engage in self-development. And I want to also mention a very fascinating thing. One of the things that's, I think, missing today as well, and I think once you get a good relationship with your child and perhaps with a coalition of parents, you can't just take kids away from certain inappropriate social settings. You can't just take them away from technology that leaves a vacuum. You also need to fill that. And sometimes I think because we're so scared today about what's going to excite children, we fall into a trap that, let's organize something for our kids to do that's going to be amazingly fun. I don't know, let's get a seminary girl to take our kids to bowling and to this, that, and the other. These things have a place and it's fantastic. But I think we need a bit of a shift of focus. One of the things that's spoken about in modern day literature about how to build up empathy and how to build up sort of that selflessness as opposed to selfishness, right? I mentioned before, and I want to mention it again, I'm coming back to this in a second, that today there's a documented decline in empathy, which means there's a documented increase in selfishness and self-absorption. Now, the problem with self-absorption, by the way, is not only that it stands in the way of being adam lachaveira, of being having proper social interactions with other people. The problem is, if you can't make space for other people, you can't make space for the Eibishter either, right? We don't make space for God. We don't make space for anything that's beyond ourselves. So one of the things is we need to take away, first of all, the problem, which is the overexposure to technology, the overexposure to inappropriate substances, and so on and so forth. But then we also need to find strategies for children to learn to go beyond themselves, to grow, to work on themselves. One of the ways of doing that, apart from, of course, encouraging them to learn extra and so on and so forth, is actually organizing, volunteering, ongoing chesed activities for children to do. Because, and I think, that they don't always have to have an amazing amount of fun. They have to taste a little bit and sort of develop a little bit of a desire to sort of maybe, come together to help, and not just once a year to do a phone-a-thon or something, but to do it on an ongoing basis, maybe to start a group with some parents with kids who will, pack food for poor people or visit people in nursing homes, whatever the case is, just to train that empathy, to train noticing others, to train that process of going beyond themselves, and also that also strengthens and empowers children to then create that space to look beyond themselves and therefore to look for more meaning, for more purpose, to get excited about learning, about davening, about Yiddishkeit, about halacha, and so on and so forth. There's so much more to talk about, but I'm going to end with two very, very short things. And as I say, I, by all means, if you want to contact for more questions, I'm just gonna type here in the chat. Give me 1 second. Okay. I've just put the link to Dr. Pelkowitz's article there, so people can take it. I want to just also there was a question about mental health warning signs, that is very, very, very important, but beyond the scope of this discussion, I will just say that it is, first of all, unfortunately today, not uncommon for people to experience mental health problems. By the way, it's specifically not uncommon for teenagers, particularly at the beginning of high school, to have anxiety or depression or other mental health issues. It's part of being aware, getting to know your child, and if you see warning signs, act upon it. Speak to someone, speak to the school, speak to a professional. If you think there's a problem, clarified. Not always the problem. Sometimes it might be you might be overdoing the problem, but it doesn't matter. But don't ignore signs It's all part of not ignoring. And again, this is a very important topic, but not really in the scope of this discussion. So let me just finish with two very important things, and I'll just have a look at some of the remaining questions. When you invest in teenage, one of the things that parents find difficult sometimes is when you invest in teenagers, you don't often see the immediate feedback. They don't show a lot of appreciation. They resist. They fight you. Often. Not always. Sometimes takes time. I want to just say that the Gemara says, Yogaita o Mutsasa Taimen. If you invest effort, you see success. Success is not always tomorrow. We see success later on. So we have to really believe in our own strength. We have to really believe that we can do it. We have to believe that the more effort we put in, Chazaka l'tamulo sha'inu chazeres reikam, it comes back. It will come back. We'll see fruits in some way or another. But be intelligent about it. Be careful about it. Speak to other people. Reach out for help if you need to. Don't do it alone. Because sometimes we feel, you know, maybe everyone else is being successful and we're not. A lot of people are struggling. Talk to each other. Talk to a Rav. Talk to a Mashpia. Talk to a professional if you need to. Some teenagers are particularly challenging. You need to reach out for proper help. Don't be afraid to do it. It's not a weakness. It's a strength. Someone just asked me, what's the name of Rabbi Schombach's book? It's called At Risk, Never Beyond Reach. Before I finish with one final thought, let me just... one second here. Another question that came up here, which is, okay, I have a question about boys talking to girls and things like that. It's a first of all, various from community to community. It's a very also about talking to kids about respecting their own body and consent and things like that. These are all important discussions. I'm afraid I'm happy for you to reach out to me privately to talk about it, but it's going to be a little bit of a longer discussion. Let me just end with this thought then. After all said and done, we put in the effort, and Emir Tshem Hashem will give us success. But we also have to remember that we need Siyata Dishmaya. And I don't mean this just as a nice way to end the drasha, I mean this very seriously. Women, when they bench licht, men, when they say tilim, you need to daven for your children. You need to daven for chinuch. Davening is not enough, you need to do also, but we also need to daven. We need to really daven to the Eibishter, Shenizke, Lirois, Bonim, when they Bonim, Oiskim, Torah, Mitzvahs. We need to cry, we need to daven a heartfelt tilim. My Zayda used to say that the two things that can never be enough, you can never do too much of, and that is tea and tilim. Drinking tea and saying tilim. But he said there's one condition, they both have to be warm. He always used to have a hot cup of tea, and the tilim has to be a varim, a kapitel tilim. We need to daven to the Eibishter, and we need to believe in our own tefillahs. We need to believe that when we really daven, the Eibishter listens. So the Eibishter should help. We should keep davening and pre-doing. We should have more discussions like this. We should go to talk about chinuch. Spend time with your wife, with your husband every day, talking about chinuch as we were taught to do. Talk to friends, talk to rabbanim, talk to mashpim, talk to professionals. It's never enough. Think about it a lot. Talk about it a lot. Believe in yourself as a parent. Maintain that balance of the sea with connection, with the sea with control, and the sea of communication. Combine all those things together. Do it cleverly. Do it intelligently. We do make mistakes, and it's okay. Don't beat yourself up. We make a mistake. We try again. Things go a little bit. We need to tweak things along the way. Sometimes certain children just need different things. Sometimes we need to put up with certain things we wouldn't want to put up with certain children. We get advice for that, and that's also okay. The main thing is keep loving, keep accepting, keep being a parent, keep davening, and the Eibishter will give us a lot of nachas in Mitzvah. And I wish everyone a lot of nachas in their children. And we should only see Atzlacha and Besuras Tovus. Hopefully we'll have some more of these in the future, but in the meantime, Hatzlacha Rabba, and only good things. Holtov.
Just to know, for the Kesset Torah parents, we're going to send out some notes from this share. together with some recommendations of some of them which were mentioned, Custodia and a few others, of some filters and things like that. Anyone else who, if you're not parents in Castletown, if you live in Melbourne, you can contact the Binner office and you'll be able to receive that as well, probably in about 2 days' time. Thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi Garani, as well.
Pleasure. The woman of Cantor Binner office, it's office@binner.com.au, BINA. Or rabbi@binner.com.au is also good. Okay, I'm going to end the meeting. Thank you very much, everyone.